Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Deb.
Lovely to be with you on this. Well, it's looking like quite a grey May weekend, the last weekend of May.
Well, it has to be expected, Deb. It is winter, after all, on Monday.
Exactly, yeah. Right. It is. So we're moving towards only 3 weeks away from the shortest day of the year, and then we can look forward to it getting a little bit lighter and brighter later in the year. But we would love your calls on 1300 222 891. Sophie Thompson, of course, is away at the moment in the UK. And Brett, we'll have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away later on, but we're going to be lifting the lid on Open Gardens essay and taking a peek behind the scenes.
Many of us, or many gardeners, if you like, attend Open Gardens. And during right through the warmer months of the year, there's multiple gardens that are open. But we go and enjoy. But really, what's behind?
Yeah.
What's behind it? How does it actually work? You know, why do we have this wonderful organisation, these gardens that we can enjoy, you know, and who makes that happen? That's the thing that we're going to find out.
Exactly. So I would like to say we are welcoming to the studio Jamie McIlwain. We know him as a master landscaper. He's also co-chairperson of Open Gardens SA, and welcoming back Rob Andrew Arthur, who is treasurer and founding committee member. Great to have you in the studio.
Good morning, guys. It's great to be here.
I know you've got loads of questions, Brett, so I'll leave it in your hands for the minute.
I do. Now, Jamie, tell us, what is Open Gardens SA, briefly? What does it actually do?
Look, in a nutshell, the technical answer would be Open Gardens SA is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit organisation dedicated to opening exceptional private gardens to the public and celebrates the diverse benefits of gardens and gardening in South Australia. That's our technical answer. What is it really? It's a, in my view, it's a gift to our community. It's a privilege to be invited freely onto people's private properties and view what our amazing and generous garden owners have created.
Yeah, and you find, I mean, gardeners are generally very generous and wanting to share, and I guess it's an opportunity for them to be able to show the wider gardening community what can be achieved.
Absolutely. And it's incredible to see the diversity too in the different gardens that we do open, from big and small ones. And even for me as a professional, going onto people's gardens and saying, well, I really wouldn't have thought that plant combination would have worked, but it's fabulous. And then I can go away inspired to even use that elsewhere. So it's a great source of inspiration, and just seeing how different people put gardens together. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I know from a garden centre perspective, often when there are open gardens, particularly in our area, we often have customers that come in during the week with photos on their phone from a garden, and I usually say, well, I didn't get there because I'm working, but they've got exactly the same thing. They've seen a planting combination or a particular plant which has been established and looks lovely, and say, oh, I want to create that or something similar to that in my own garden. Can you get me that plant?
Yeah.
It's a great way to see things in a more established environment.
Certainly, it's a tangible way. It's better than, you know, Googling something or looking at a book. It's you can see these plants, you can see how they work, how big they grow, and beyond that, you've got the garden owners there to discuss, you know, but what is this plant, or what is this decking, or what is this feature wall or this water feature that you've got, and where did you get it from? And it's a very unique experience.
Yeah, and you can share. Often, you know, there's a lot of trial and tribulation that, you know, but that gardeners go through at times.
Yeah.
And there might be you're right, they are willing to share that, and particularly if it's a tricky position, for instance, and how they've actually overcome that.
Yeah, like, you know, dry shade, you know, you look at these plants and think, oh, I never thought of using that one there. It's doing so well under his pine tree. And there are certain, or a wet spot, you know, just looking at where plants are surviving and thinking, yeah, that's great. I'm going to get one of them and use that plant in the spot in my garden that nothing wants to grow, because everyone's got that spot in their garden.
Yeah, they do. Very much so. Yeah, yeah. Now, Rob, you're the actual treasurer of,
yes,
Open Gardens SA, but you're a founding member, a founding committee member.
I am indeed, yes.
Yeah.
It came about because we'd opened our garden under the old scheme, and when we heard that it was going to fold, we thought, this can't happen in South Australia. This is just not just not a thing that can do. You know, South Australians love their gardens. So myself and my partner, we sort of went along to an initial meeting, and we all had a bit of a chat and said, we're going to do this in South Australia. So, yeah, we were part of the re-emergence of the scheme here in South Australia.
Thank heavens for people like you and your partner.
Yeah, definitely. And so you're part of a committee. And so how many people are on the committee? Is it?
We've got 13 so right. currently, the baker's dozen. So, and we're not all gardeners. Like, we've got a dentist, we had a lawyer. You know, we're just passionate about gardening. We're not all professionals. I've never had a day's training in my life. So, but we just work together, and we've all got this in sort of separate amount of skills, and we were able to facilitate to get this amazing scheme up and running.
Yeah, well, I can see your passion, Jon. I can see your enthusiasm. If all of the committee members are as passionate as you, that's why I think it's so successful.
Yeah, no, it is, and we've been going for quite some time now here in South Australia, and I think we're just going from strength to strength. Now that we've added in some other things, we do a few festivals, we do some events, and trying to get everybody engaged with the gardening community here in South Australia.
Yeah, yeah, lovely. So you've got 13 members on the committee, but are there various roles? Do people go out? Like, how do you go out to gardens and have a look at them, or do you work with?
Well, the roles of people, I mean, like Rob said, there's only about three or four people on the committee who actually have a horticultural background. So we need people like without someone like Rob, who's actually, you know, an accountant, we need these things on the committee. So everyone does have their roles and their personal skill set that they bring to the committee. And that's what makes it a very well-rounded committee.
Yeah, okay. When someone might contact you, for instance, and say, look, I've got a garden, I'm thinking of opening it, what sort of steps do they go through?
Yeah, well, we get... gardens in different ways. Some people will self-nominate and they reach out to us at Open Gardens, and we also have spotters out there who just might say, look, I'm a volunteer for Open Gardens. They say your garden looks amazing and you should contact them to open your garden. It really is as simple as that. From there, we have selectors that go out and look at the garden and assess it for what it is, and we really look for, you know, half an hour of interest for visitors to come and have a look at. Beyond that, we flag things like, you know, dangers like water features or steps, how the parking is, or any issues, and that all gets written up. And then we, if everyone's happy with that, we move ahead and book them in, and off we go.
Book them, Dano.
That's the one.
You have to do the risk assessment, don't
yeah,
you? That's important
do.
These
That's
days.
That's part of it, yes.
Yeah, and you said earlier that what you're looking at is an exceptional garden, and of course you do have those big, beautiful, sprawling botanic gardens in the hills that are really spectacular. But are you looking more at different types of gardens? I'm thinking of smaller gardens, because lots of people have got smaller gardens now, and it's about what can you fit in a small space?
Absolutely. Look, we talk about that quite a lot, because we've got the big gardens. We call them, you know, the show gardens, for want of a better word. And that's where you take grandma for the day. And you all go out, have a cup of tea, you've had a great time, and you go home. You know, that's a great garden. But we've also now engaging with a younger audience, because they, like you say, they want to know how to grow food. They've only got small blocks. So we do try and open a whole range of smaller gardens so that the younger audience can say, oh, okay, that's how you grow such and such in a wicking bed.
I can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can do that in my space.
You know, that's right. It's not something unachievable. So I think it's really important for us to have that whole range. And we have opened up a couple of more ethnic gardens, which I just adore, you know, with the handmade chook house and the and that sort of thing. And I think that's really important as well, because I love going to those to see what they're growing that I don't necessarily know about.
And look, food security, food scarcity are already issues globally. And so people are really, really keen, not just to have that wonderful experience of having the delicious flavour and the satisfaction of growing your own, but as a way to reduce the cost of life and to ensure you've got produce available.
Yeah, that's right, Deb. It is. And back to your point, Rob, as well, you know, there's you can see, particularly with, the multicultural influence in our society, amazing sort of plants that you've never seen before growing. And the beauty that I like is you can talk to the people about what it is, but also how you actually grow it, and if you can grow it as well, because sometimes you don't actually know, and sometimes it's a lot easier than what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've opened up some community gardens, which is really interesting because they have such a diversity there of material that you know they're cooking with, and I go along and I've never seen such a thing, and that's really quite interesting. But I also think it's really important, not only the growing the plant, but I think the establishing the mental health benefits of having a garden. And I think that we promote that quite heavily. And I think it's just really important to get your hands in dirt.
It is. Yeah. And we were only speaking about this last week. You know that the human brain can see more shades of green than any other colour. We are hardwired into the benefits you get from green.
Absolutely. And I can't stress enough, speaking from somebody who has actually opened their garden, it's just so wonderful to have, you know, a large number of people coming through your garden over 2 days just saying how wonderful you are, how clever you are. And it's like, oh, okay.
And it's incredible. So many of our garden openers are, you know, especially the ones that have never opened before, are quite nervous and worried about what's going to happen. And then by the end of it, they're saying, oh, when can we do it again? That was fabulous. It was so much fun. So it really is a wonderful experience, not only for the people who are visiting the gardens, but the garden owners themselves.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, Jamie, in your introduction that, you know, Open Gardens SA is a not-for-profit organisation, but people pay an entrance fee to come into the actual garden. Where does that money go?
My goodness, it goes in so many directions. Rob and I were having a laugh about that earlier on. Look, in essence, The entry fee is split between the garden owner and Open Gardens SA. The garden owner can either donate all of their money to their charity, and most of our, you know, not 90% probably or more of our garden owners will donate to a charity that's near and dear to them, which is absolutely amazing. Some do keep it for the, you know, recovering the cost of maintenance, which is totally understandable as well. And then we also have our share. We've got obviously insurance and cost to cover, and we're at a stage now where we actually support numerous organisations and individuals. I might even get Rob to even follow on from here.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, Jamie was talking, and 50% does go back to the garden owner, and we've had projects from, you know, supporting orangutans in the jungle right through to cancer research. So the garden owner gets to choose and donate to the charity of their choice. So we don't dictate where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Open Gardens themselves are now very lucky to be in a situation where we have a giving program. So we support horticultural students. We have, through the Playford Trust, we have 3 horticultural students that we give a scholarship to every year.
Fantastic.
We have given money to bushfire regeneration, so that we can access funds quite quickly and say and work with BlazeAid and say, okay, you need X amount of money now. We can sort of access that very quickly, so that's been quite worthwhile. And then we've also have a program of giving for community grants. So if they're setting up a particular garden somewhere and they've got an actual need, we can actually then support them with that particular task or project and provide monies for that.
Yeah, and so do you have people then that come to you and say, look, I've got this particular project and, you know, and you know, we might be looking for some help, but you obviously would then need to vet them and make sure that it's a... Yeah,
yeah, we assess them as they come in. And,
okay.
And it's, you know, we'll look at the merit of what they're proposing and move forward from there.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. Now, if there's listeners out there that, for instance, think, this sounds really nice and I'd like to get involved, are you looking for volunteers? Like all organisations are often looking there, but you're looking for volunteers that might
volunteer
be able to support?
Volunteer organisations are, doing it increasingly tougher, I suppose. Things are getting harder and more expensive and everyone's time poor. We're in a very fortunate situation. We are very strong in what we do, but we are always looking for, you know, we'll never say no to assistance from our spotters who are just going around looking at gardens and contacting us you know, just generally people who want to be involved. You just reach out to us at the website and we'd love to, further that association.
Yeah, fantastic.
Well, you know, if you've got a question, you'll have to be quick. 1-300-222-891. But the bottom line is that you can make contact via the website. You've got so much on. I had a look at your newsletter at the moment. It's voluminous, so you can get a really good idea with what's involved in open gardens and whether you think, I've got a garden that might be something that you're interested in, or, hey, I'd be interested in becoming a spotter or doing something else.
Yeah, and look, a garden itself doesn't need to be perfect, does it?
Oh, no.
And it shouldn't be perfect,
no.
Should it?
And everyone has the same thing. Oh, we're not finished yet, or we want to do this. No one knows what you're going or wanting to do. Most people's gardens are just fabulous the way they are. It's really exciting to get new gardens in. I know that all of our regular visitors really get excited about seeing new gardens. So we're always loving, having a look at and bringing on board new gardens to the program. So, yeah, we're very excited about that, as are all our visitors.
Yeah. And do you keep numbers, like how many people have actually gone through over a period of time, for instance?
Certainly. We normally get somewhere between 25,000 to 30,000 visitations per year. So I think over the last 10 years, we did some sums the other day and we were sort of saying that, you know, we've had nearly 260,000 people come through our gardens.
Wow, that is a phenomenal amount of people. That's just amazing.
And raised around $1.9 million in funds for an amazing assortment of charities. And so it's a significant amount of money.
That is a significant amount
of money.
That's
incredible.
That is incredible.
That shows what happens when people like yourself, Rob, that say, we don't want to lose this here, get together, make it happen. It's win, 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 because you've got a collection of people that love gardens, you've got people that are interested in showing their gardens, people that want to visit it, and you raise money. It's such a great thing to do.
And grandma's happy.
And so is grandchild as well.
True.
You know, we're trying to, generate the new gardeners of the future. Well, look, I think that the best thing is to go to the website and make contact that way if people are interested.
Yeah, that'd be great. It'd be great to hear from people if anyone's interested in assisting or got new gardens for us.
And that's just Open Gardens SA. Is that the
www.opengardensa?
Beautiful.
Just type Open Gardens SA. It will take you there. Have a look at what is on offer at the moment. There is a lot. Well, as always, great to see you, Jamie McElwain. And we know we'll have you in very shortly again for one of the many festivals that you are behind, which is incredible. And great to see you again, Rob. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamie McElwain, Master Landscaper and, of course, co-chairperson, of Open Gardens SA. Rob Andrew Arthur, Treasurer and Founding Committee Member of Open Gardens SA. Get involved. It's ours. Go for it.
Get involved.
Yeah, exactly. We are Talkback Gardening with Brett Draper. If you would like to talk to Brett, the lines are free. We'd love your calls on 1300 222 891.
Welcome to Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
If you'd like to call us, we're ready for your calls on 1300 222 891. Now, Brett, just as we're waiting for our calls, what about flowers available in garden centres at the moment?
Well, of course, you know, coming into winter, there's not a lot of colour. Well, I shouldn't say that. There is a lot of colour. And in particular, cyclamen at the moment are looking absolutely spectacular. We normally see them sort of at the beginning of May in preparation for Mother's Day. But now that the weather started to get a little bit cooler, they are really in their element. They love the cooler nights. It's just spectacular. The other thing that you'll find as well, I mean, there's always Sasanqua camellias. So they flower a little bit earlier, starting in April, and right through May they look great. And we're also starting to see hellebores appear. Now, they're not quite in flower, but they won't be far off, and they're a beautiful winter flowering perennial plant to have, particularly if you've got quite a shaded area during the summer months of the year, under a deciduous tree or in a lovely pot. They really make a fantastic display.
Wonderful. And thank you to Bronwyn at Marino, who texts through on 0467922891, said, I had a chuckle at keeping grandma happy with the Open Gardens SA. That's me, says Bronwyn at Marino. Thank you very much. Let's go to Leo in Semaphore, who would like to replot his. Now, I always get in trouble. Is it clivias? Is it clivias? You work in a garden centre.
I say clivias, and if it's wrong, well, I'll take it, but I don't think it's wrong.
Okay, Leo, what do you call them?
Well, it can only possibly be clivias. You look at the structure of the word.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, now tell us about it, Leo.
I have about half a dozen pots, most of which are flowering at the moment. which seems a bit strange to me. Mm. But they're also bursting out the sides. So I want to know when's the best time to divide them and repot them.
Yeah, look, the best time would be after flowering. And you're right, it is very early, Leo, because normally you wouldn't expect to see them flowering until the beginning of spring. So, you know, sort of late September, October is their main flowering period. And look, they don't mind being pot-bound, so don't be in a hurry to necessarily divide them too quickly. But enjoy the flowers while you've got them now, and once they're finished flowering, then you can give them a repot.
Right, okay. So it's just divide them with a spade and...
Yeah,
it
can often be with a spade or an axe, because if they've been established for a while, they are very hard to separate. Yeah, as long as you've got a nice sharp blade, they will come apart nice and easily.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Thanks, Leo. Good luck. Ian's in Morfitt Vale. Now, you're looking for some shallow rooted veggies, Ian. Hello.
Yes, hello. Yes, I'm particularly interested in swedes and turnips, if they're going to be in... short supply or not supplied at all. I have a raised garden bed that's only about 100 metres deep, 100 centimetres deep, rather.
Yeah, metre deep, yep.
100 centimetres.
That's a
metre? That's a metre. So
no, 100 millimetres.
So it's only 10 centimetres. Okay, it's very shallow. Yeah. Okay, yes.
And I've been growing successfully silver beet in that.
Yes.
But that crop is actually dying out, and I have had the silver beet in for years because it just keeps on growing. But that's where I would like to relocate the silver beet, and if I need to put in the swedes and turnips.
Ian, it's probably not deep enough for a root crop like swedes or turnips. 10 centimetres is not all that deep. You'd at least want twice that depth if you can.
Right.
So do you have some space in the garden where you might be able to grow them, or do you have some large pots that you could possibly use?
I could grow them in pots.
Yep. So what you'll find is they're not all that commonly grown, but seeds are available to buy, but normally you would establish them in sort of late summer, autumn, and they would germinate when the soil's warm, and they'll be growing right through the winter months, you know, you start to harvest them, I mean, depending on how early you plant them, of course, so it's a little bit late to probably plant them just at the moment. But you can certainly get seeds and certainly several varieties of seeds out there. But, that you generally don't find them as small plants to plant out.
Yes, okay. One more question about the same topic.
Yep.
I do have a greenhouse, so could I get in early, a bit later in the year, of course, but a little bit later than...
you can
around September and that.
Definitely, you can get in early if you've got a little glass house or a mini hot house or something like that. You can certainly get in early.
Thank you very much, Ian, for the call. And now I know where the argument about clivias and clivias comes from, because this texter says, I once heard that clivias were named after Clive of India. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know, but that might be why some people say clivias and some people say clivias.
It could be.
Alex from Broadview, I reckon we can fit you in before the 9 o'clock news. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Alex. How can we help?
So I've built a massive raised garden bed that's about 7 metres long. It's about a metre wide. It's 75 centimetres tall. And I want to fill it using hugelkultur, which is putting logs and then sticks and then leaves and then weeds and then a bit of soil at the top. Now, if I were to fill that with garden soil, it would cost me thousands of dollars. But basically, I'm trying to utilise my neighbours, and they have sticks in their yard. They have chickens. They have chicken poo, all that sort of stuff. Can I just take that and throw it in there, or do I need to be careful with that sort of stuff?
What sort of material is it? Is it from what sort of trees?
Well, we've been walking around with the kids and picking up sticks from around the neighbourhood as well. So just whatever council trees they are, most of them are natives, I think.
Yeah.
Nothing poisonous that I'm aware of.
No. But look, in theory, there shouldn't be an issue. And a lot of people often use compost, or they sometimes, you know, bulk the bottom of their raised garden beds up with organic matter like straw and things like that, which will break down over a period of time. And so if you're using sticks and branches and things like that, if you chop them up and put them in the actual bottom of the bed, that will obviously help with a little bit of drainage as well. And that will break down over a slower period of time. But you do need a good layer of organic matter and some soil on top to grow your plants. And but as that breaks down, you'll find that you'll just need to continue to top up your bed every year with organic matter and compost. So if you've also got an area where you can make your own compost, that would be ideal to actually use. And as I said, the other thing that a lot of people use is straw, like pea straw and things like that. You can put large biscuits of pea straw underneath initially, and that will give you the bulk so you're not having to fill the whole area with soil, but it will break down and actually give you a beautiful rich soil over time.
Oh, perfect. Sounds great. I'll give it a crack.
Good luck. Sounds great. Tell us how you go, Alex, with the produce in it.
And great to get the kids involved.
Yeah.
Oh, they're loving it.
That's brilliant, Alex. And future gardeners there, well, they're current gardeners getting into it. I love to hear that. We would love to hear more of your questions on 1300 222 891.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper, 891, ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Deb.
Sophie, of course, is in the UK. You're in the seat this weekend and next weekend, and lovely to have you on this last weekend in May. Winter just around the corner, and doesn't it feel like it?
It does. But look, there's another little bit of blue sky here at Collinswood.
There is. Take it while you can. I think we're in for quite a wet and windy week ahead. So
it sounds like it. And look, I know some areas have had a little bit of good rain during the week, but it would be great to get some more rain. We really do need it.
I had a phone call from Matt in Karoonda first thing this morning, who received 46 millimetres in 12 hours.
Wow.
One of those rain dumps. So, yes, but I think we all enjoy the rain here in South Australia. We never knock it, so bring it on. We would love to hear your calls on 1300 222 891. I have got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away later, one by phone, one by text. If you'd like to get ready, we need your full name and postal address when I ask you to send it through. And we did speak earlier to Alex from Broadview, who was making up a new garden bed. And Helen on the text line, which is 0467 922 891, suggests that you might want to use autumn leaves also in abundance at the moment to help raise garden beds. Now, the only thing there is, could they create a bit of a layer that might prevent water from going down? I guess it would depend whether you've mulch them up or not.
If you're putting them in the bottom of the bed, Deb, that would be fine. If you were putting them on top, that would be an issue, because autumn leaves, and we did touch on this last week, but they, if you mound them up in a mound, and I actually mentioned that I make some circular rings out of chicken wire so I can get some air into the sides, and I mulch the leaves up and pop them in there and let them moulder away all through winter, and by the end of winter coming into spring, you've got this beautiful rich soil which is just spectacular for adding to any garden beds.
Sounds great.
But if you're putting them on the bottom, again, they will break down a little bit slower, but they will still break down, and there's plenty around. So in Alex's case, that will give him some bulk in the bottom of those beds, because those beds were 75 centimetres deep. I'll get it right in a minute. Which means the roots of most vegetables are not going to go down that deep anyway, initially. So,
right. Well, there you go. Another thing to consider if you're making yourself a garden bed. Now, we've got lots of calls, so we'll dive straight into them. Claire from Oakden joins us with a feijoa tree question. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. Yes, my feijoa tree's just finished fruiting. It's been an absolutely amazing season.
Great.
Really nice quality and enormous number. And my question is, when can I prune the tree, which is very, very large now because I've just let it go?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is it too wet with all this rain coming to prune it now? When should I prune it, and how hard can I prune it to get the best crop for next year?
Okay. So when you say how hard to prune it, like what sort of size is it and what are you wanting to bring it back to?
Well, it's huge, over 10 feet, and it's just going in every direction, and I just need to be able to get past it to get into the shed and
yeah, sure,
around it. So I just need to, Yeah, take it back. And also there's lots and lots of branches, whether I should thin any of the branches out in
yes.
the middle of the tree.
Yeah, definitely. Thinning would be a really ideal thing to do, because thinning actually allows air movement and light into the centre of the tree, which will allow for better fruiting, particularly lower down in the tree itself. Now that it's finished fruiting, you can actually prune it, but you would want to be doing that when you've got 2 or 3 days of finer weather. Don't prune in the wet if you can. It's a really good idea if you can to prune on a fine day, because that just means that those fresh cuts that you've pruned are able to actually dry naturally and just seal off naturally to stop, you know, potentially any nasties getting in there, which there shouldn't be a lot around, but it's a really good idea just to do it on a fine day. So probably not this coming week, but in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure there'll be some finer weather where you've got a 2 or 3 day window where you'll be able to prune that. In terms of the reduction in height, you know, so it's about 10 feet. You said you want to bring it down.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you want to bring it down by half, or do you want to do a little bit less than that?
It's not so much the height, it's the sideways.
Oh, it's the width. It's the width that's there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that in terms of width, I mean, sometimes you just have to work with what you've got, and if you need to access areas in your garden. So width is actually, you know, quite easily to actually trim, but it will probably want to encourage it to grow up further as well. So you may want to do some tip pruning of those higher branches just so it doesn't get any higher as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Brett.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Claire, for calling 1300 222 891. More advice for Alex and the raised garden bed. Margaret in Hindmarsh says, go to the Morfettville race course and grab some horse manure. I think he had quite a bit of other manure going in at the time. There is an issue, a slight issue with horse manure, isn't there?
There can be, depending on where it comes from, and it could be around some of the medications and things that they actually give horses. And you just probably, if you're using it in an area where you've got an edible crop, I would suggest that if you're going to do that, you make sure it's fully composted first. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wouldn't be necessarily adding it to a bed straight away. I'd be wanting to compost it separately. But you generally find that, you know, the probably even on if you drive around, you know, sort of semi-rural sort of areas, there's usually bags of chicken manure or horse manure on the side of the road that you can pick up, and that would probably be much better.
Yeah, and I think Alex had already got some
yes.
chicken manure yeah. ready to go. Anna is in Netley with a question about a dwarf Eureka seedless lemon tree. Hello, Anna.
Oh, good morning, Deb and Brett. Yes, I'm thinking of getting a couple of lemon trees that I want to put into pots. So they need to be dwarf. And I heard that there was a Eureka seedless lemon tree that's available now. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, Anna, to be honest, but it'd be wonderful if there is a seedless one, although some varieties can be, even in Eureka, some plants can actually produce more seeds than others. Mm-hmm. I'm just racking my brain why we're thinking. I haven't heard of one, but look, if there is one out there, that would be fantastic.
Because my next question was, have you got any idea where I can get them from?
Yeah, look, it's not the ideal time to be planting citrus just at the moment, Anna, because they don't like to be planted or even transplanted in colder months when the soil is cold. So there are some, you know, there are citrus plants available in good nurseries and garden centres at the moment. But if you were to find one, I would suggest you hold that and you wait for the soil to warm and not pot that out probably until October. It's really important that when you do that, that you eat, you wait for that actual soil, or even though it's in a pot, but the actual temperatures to be much, much warmer. And that okay. will mean that you won't set the citrus back. I mean, citrus are very, very hardy. They will survive, but planting them in cold soil versus warm soil can be the difference between it fruiting, well, 2 or 3 years before it can actually fruit, because it does set it back. So do it when it's warmer.
Okay. One more question.
Yep.
What kind of soil would I need for the lemon tree in a pot?
Yep. Yep. So large tub, you probably want to be looking at 50 or 60 centimetres in diameter if you can, even though it's on a dwarfing rootstock. It's ideally if you can have a large tub and a good quality premium potting soil is what you need to look at. The reason why we recommend that is it's got all of the trace elements. It will contain some wetting agent, but it's also got some really good structure to the soil, which gives you good what we call air fill porosity in the soil, which means that you get lots and lots of air down into those roots and the tree can get established and hopefully fruit for you in that second season.
Oh, great. Oh, look, I appreciate the information. So I'll go hunting around now and seeing if I can find any.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And there could be some callers or some listeners out there that might actually know the actual name of the variety. I've got something in the back of my mind, but I just can't get it forward.
It might come to you. You never know. And Anna, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much on 1300 222 891. Thank you to Beck Invicta, says listening and but not well during the night. It's not the Chelsea Garden Show, but have a great day. And she sent through a beautiful bunch of flowers for us. Thank you very much. A virtual bunch of flowers. Helen is in Kapunda. Hello, Helen.
Oh, good morning.
What's your story in the garden at the moment?
Well, I've overplanted some trees, and in the middle of some trees, there's some spindly ones that I want to cut to the ground, the base, and leave the roots in the ground. And I thought I can either poison, I know poison's not the best, but I'm just wondering if I did just paint the poison over it, about 10 centimetres wide, the trunk, poison them with either a mild poison or a more severe one, and put black plastic over it. Will that poison, as the roots decompose underneath the ground, leach into the ground around that dead base of the tree eventually?
There's always that possibility, Helen. What sort of trees are they? Did you say they were natives or are they?
No, I put some poplars in between some big claret ashes in a dry circle. Then I put, there's a Manchurian chair out there. A miniature Manchurian pear and another shrub.
Yes.
I mean, they're not massive. They're not big.
Yep.
You know, like they might be 1.5-2 metres, or the poplars might have gone for 3, but they're not surviving well in amongst all these other trees.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
If you're going to be removing some poplars, you just need to be careful because that may cause them to sucker if you do that. So it's probably a good idea, if you can, to look at when you cut them to using a blackberry or tree killing product. But you need to use it responsibly and very carefully. And you apply it generally directly to a stump or basil treatment. And some people also will drill some holes in there, but all I would suggest is use it sparingly, and particularly for the poplar because it can sucker. For other trees that don't sucker, you'll find if you cut them down almost at ground level, they may want to reshoot, but if you keep removing those shoots, you probably won't need to actually use any sort of poison or herbicide on them at all. Eventually the energy will be exhausted within the tree because it's not producing any foliage, and it will just die naturally and then break down naturally. So it's really, you know, the poplars that might have a root system which might cause them to sucker that I would be a little bit concerned about. And you may want to just not do anything initially when you cut them down and just see what happens. Sometimes they don't sucker.
Okay.
And then you could deal with them beyond that, because it sounds like it's a fairly challenging situation for them to grow anyway, because they're going to be competing for light and other nutrients and things because of your other trees.
Yeah.
So nature might be on your side.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Helen. We love the calls. Now, coming back to Anna and Netley's question about the lemon tree, had a couple of suggestions. Lulu says it's called Lucky Lemon 88, Seedless Eureka.
Right, okay, great.
But then we've had another suggestion saying it's Dwarf Lemon Heaven, a Seedless Eureka.
Oh, there is a Heaven Scent. Yes, I've heard of Heaven Scent.
Right,
yes.
So yep. It could
And that
be
is available in garden centres, yes.
Right, excellent. So thanks for that. We have got a couple of ABC magazines to give away. So if you haven't won anything from the ABC in the last month and you'd like to win yourself an ABC Organic Gardener magazine, we'll take one by phone on 1300 222 891. If you put your full name and postal address on a text, and this is for people that might be listening on digital or other, don't give up. You can send that through to 0467 922 891.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Brett Draper. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Let's head to Cummins. Gabby, you've got a little carrot seedling that you germinated from seed. Well done.
Yeah, carob.
Oh, carob.
Yeah. Thank you. From a local tree, which is pretty cool, but probably the wrong time of the year. But anyway, it's growing. My question was, it's probably about 3 to 4 centimetres tall at the moment in a small pot, and just wondering how I should look after it over winter and when I should repot it and into what soil.
Okay, well, Gabby, great that you've been able to collect the seed and you've got it to germinate. And look, it doesn't matter what time you really do it. If you've had success, just take it, just run with it. At the moment, what is it actually planted in? Is it in a small tube or a small pot?
Hello, Gabby.
I think she may Gabby's have dropped, dropped I think out. She might have dropped
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Gabby, give us a call back, 1300 222 891. Congratulations to John in Teetree Gully, who has won the magazine on the phone line. Thank you to Frosty, who is said his Zygo cactus is blooming marvellous. Thank you, Frosty. It looks lovely with the pale purple flowers on it. Absolutely gorgeous. And I do want to end the Clivia clivia argument. I think it is Clivia. Jeff says, native to Natal, South Africa, Clivias were named after Lady Charlotte Florentina Clive, Duchess of Northumberland, who was the granddaughter of Robert Clive, better known as Clive of India. The name Clivia can be pronounced as the name Clive to rhyme with hive, or with a hard sound as in liver, Clivia. Many of the Clivia enthusiasts pronounce it the latter way. So basically, they're both right.
Well, that's a great outcome, Deb.
Yeah. So,
and I'm an enthusiast, so I'm a Clivia.
Okay, so don't send any more through. Now, I have to say that we're having trouble with our phone lines. So we are hoping to fix that. So do stay tuned. If you're trying to get through, just keep trying. It might be a little bit tricky, but we will get there in the end, I promise you. So let's have a chat about what the recent rains might have done to our grasses and our weeds, because I can tell you, I've got a very green garden of weeds at the moment, Brett.
Yes, a lot of people have, and we've had lots of people through the garden centre as well with exactly the same thing. And ideally, if you can get onto these weeds before they get any bigger, that would be a great solution. And if they're in a garden bed, for instance, and they're quite small, you don't necessarily need to spray them or do anything with that. You can just hoe the area over or rake the area over and just rake them out onto the top, and they will just break down naturally. But if they're in a gravel path or they're in a pathway where you can't actually do that, you could look at on a finer day, look at using an organic weed killer. And there's quite a few on the market these days. And why the weeds are really small, that will just knock them off quite quickly. And once that happens, you've then stopped that particular seed bank for the season. There'll be more later, I'm sure, but you will have knocked them off for that period of time. But it's a really good time to act now while they're small and before they get a chance to actually get any bigger.
Yes, so that's a very good thing to do right now. In terms of what is looking beautiful in the garden, flower-wise, what are you seeing?
Well,
tricky time of the year.
It is a tricky time of the year, but your annuals are always looking good at this time of the year. So pansies and violas are looking spectacular at the moment. They have really been quite a show this season. And we're also starting to see things like I was going to say clivias, but I've got that on the mind. Cineraria is what I was thinking of. Cinerarias are coming through.
Oh, they've such bright colours.
They are striking colours and looking spectacular. Lobelias are looking great. There's a whole series of things. Snapdragons, Antirrhinums are also looking brilliant. And of course, we touched on cyclamen before, but cyclamen, to keep them looking good, as the flowers start to deteriorate and die off, it's a really good idea to pluck those out rather than cutting them out, and they come out right from the corm. And any foliage that might be around there too, which is looking a little bit yellow or starting to die back, remove that at the same time. If you leave that there, it will start to break down and it can cause a rot or a botrytis on there, which can affect the plant and spread through the plant. So it's a really good idea just to do a bit of regular maintenance on them and just pluck out those spent flowers and leaves that are on there. And by doing that, that will keep them much, much happier, and they will flower for longer. And if you've got them inside, enjoy them, but pop them out at night for the cold night air. You will find that they'll do much better. They don't like too much artificial heat.
Okay, no worries. Congratulations to Misty at Penrice, who is the other winner of our magazine this morning. Now, just to ask you some of the questions that have come through on the text line, given our phone lines aren't working anymore, a bit, I always say speed dating, and that may be an outdated thing now. People use their apps to date. But if I can just throw some questions at you.
Sure.
Oh, we think we might have them going again. If you've got a quick question, call in now, 1-300-222-891. We might be able to squeeze one or two in. Is it too late to plant fruit trees, specifically pear and quince?
Actually, bare root season for fruit trees is about to get underway. So it's not necessarily too late to plant them. It's probably a little bit early to plant them. If you've already got one, for instance, which is in a pot, you probably want to wait just a few more weeks for that to become completely dormant. And then once that's dormant, then you can plant that out into the soil. That's the best time to do it. So, you know, ideally up until sort of the middle of August. You don't want to leave it beyond that, but June and July is a good month, and we'll find that bare root fruit trees and ornamental trees for that matter will start to arrive in garden centres generally by the long weekend, which I think is it next weekend or
I
the week after?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't keep a track of long weekends because I don't work on a Monday usually, and they often take me by surprise, but I think it is the June long weekend.
Yeah, so it's we're almost at that time. So, but prepare the soil now. Preparation is the key.
Yes, and just on beautiful flowering at the moment, Anne says my begonias are looking lovely, pink and white and red.
Oh, gorgeous. Yeah, love begonias.
Yeah, Mandy in Collinswood has sent through a beautiful photograph of her Clivia clavia. Let's just leave it there, everybody. Flowering right now, says I separated a couple of weeks ago when they were seemingly not flowering. Maybe I shocked them because now they are flowering.
Well, that's incredible if you did that a couple of weeks ago, but wow, wonderful. It's incredible that they're flowering. There must be something going on with the weather or something that we've got some early flowers.
Well, the seasons are all out of whack now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And just quickly, Heather at Trot Park says, I'm picking up bare-rooted roses today. Is it too early to plant them now?
Not at all, no. Not at all. If the soil is ready to go, you're picking them up, you can plant them now.
Excellent. Amy has called in from Beulah Park with a fig tree question. Good morning, Amy.
Oh, hello. Good morning. I was just wondering, I've got a fig tree that I planted in about 2 years ago that's quite close to, well, a metre away from the foundation of my house, and I've been told that the roots can be quite invasive. And it's a fruit fig tree. So I'm just wondering whether I should move that.
Yeah, did you say, was it a fruiting variety, Amy, did you say?
Yes.
It is a fruit. Yeah, metre might be a little bit too close. They won't, and it probably won't have a really good opportunity to be able to develop a good canopy either if it's that close to the house as well. So it's coming up to the time now where, again, they're about to become dormant, and you can then transplant them quite successfully. How big is the tree now?
About 1.5 metres tall at the moment.
Yep, okay, sure. And do you have somewhere else in the garden that you can move it to which is further away from the house that's going to get, you know, plenty of sun?
Yeah, I do. It won't have as much sun, but it certainly will be further away from my house.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's probably less likely. I mean, other ficus varieties, which are, you know, some more ornamental, generally have a more invasive root system, and we recommend you wouldn't plant them at all. But it's always any sort of tree in close proximity to a house is probably better moved away. So if you can move it away, I would be recommending that.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
All right.
So what's the minimum distance between the house and the actual trunk?
Yeah. Well, look, if you can go, you know, 3 meters or more, that would be ideal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
Amy, for the call. And Mandy has backed up her previous text by saying the strelitzias are almost ready to open, a huge number of blooms coming this year, and these little Altamira. So I've got some beautiful, from a friend's garden, beautiful strelitzias at the moment. Absolutely stunning.
Gorgeous, aren't they? Yeah, they're an amazing flower too. Just that lovely shape to them is just so unique.
It certainly is. And so are you, Brett Draper. We love your work. Thank you very much for coming in to do Talk Back Gardening again with me this morning. You'll be back next Saturday to do it again.
I will be, yes.
I'm looking forward to it the first weekend of June, which means that also following Talkback Gardening, we'll have Darren Ray with his seasonal outlook for gardeners. We might be in Talkback Gardening now I think about it, because it is the beginning of the season, so we will be talking to Darren Ray.
Fantastic.
Next week, so yeah. Keep that one in your diary. Brett, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Deb. It's been a pleasure.